Arizona's news station, KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Get some perspective. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
All right, so Pamela and I saw this study that said that 16% of people admit to being
hopped up on the weed.
High at work.
They're hopped up on the weed.
Smoking the Mary Jane, all right? So we thought that sounded a little redonkulous.
Well, 16%. Yeah, I just, maybe because I haven't experienced it here, or maybe I just didn't know or look, what to look for.
Does it have to do with the age group you're working with? Because I wonder if it's more, you can imagine, common with younger people. Can I tell you, I got a tweet.
What did you get the tweet saying?
I worked at a major office supply retail store.
Okay, there's only a couple of those, but continue.
The employees would take marijuana smoke breaks in the parking lot in front of the store. At one point, more than half of all employees were regular pot smokers. And I take that to mean during work.
Okay. And, you know, I think you're going to have certain industries where, not that it's acceptable, but maybe it's more,
hopefully prevalent. Not airline pilot, you mean?
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Right. Hopefully. But, you know, I kind of went through some of the job history that I've done. And, you know, fast food worker. All right. So you get the wrong burger. You know,
what's the worst case scenario if you screw it up?
Right. No ketchup. Yeah, you're going to tick me off, but I'll survive. But then, you know, I also think about my dad who worked in construction. He was the safety manager at a massive, you know, commercial construction company. So I was a little surprised when we opened it up to our listeners on the open mic line. Have you seen this? Have you experienced this? Tell us your stories, because I was just absolutely floored at some of the stories we were hearing. And apparently the construction industry, which is pretty dangerous.
It is.
They wear hard hats.
Yeah.
It happens, like, a lot.
Jason from Phoenix, working in the construction industry for 20 years. Mm-hmm. It's what they use lunch for, basically. Lunch is for, and breaks are for going out, getting high, smoking a little weed, come back feeling good. You can smell it on them. Now that they have vape pens and other easier ways to do it, it's much easier to just kind of hide it and get away with it. But yeah, it's pretty commonplace in the construction industry.
What?
Told
you so. Is that what you're going to say?
Yeah. I mentioned earlier that when I went for a ride along with DPS, we arrested a guy for DUI, marijuana driving, under the influence of marijuana driving, who, in the process of just talking to him about what he did and asking how much he smokes and his tolerance, this and the other, he admitted that he wakes up every morning, does the wake and bake, smokes before he goes to work, smokes during work, and smokes after work. Smokes all the darn time. Work is just not going to get in the way of him smoking marijuana.
He's a pothead.
Yeah.
Hey, this is Arnold from Mesa. I used to work for a construction company as well, and as well as a heavy machinery operator, and there were people taking smoke breaks. They were smoking marijuana.
Oh, jeez.
They were smoking out of pipes, the pens, all kinds of things.
You're hearing a common theme over and over again. It seems much more prevalent, at least in the construction industry.
Well, you had also gotten a text from a friend of ours who is a well-known chef in the Valley.
Yeah, restaurateur.
And you know what? In that industry, I could see it. The reason why I could see it is I spent a lot of time in the restaurant world.
All right.
And my time, it was alcohol. You know, like, everybody was drinking. And I don't think I ever saw this, but it doesn't surprise me, I guess you got. I read Anthony Bourdain's book, for goodness sakes.
Rebecca, I'm over in Avondale. Mm-hmm. We have high employees in my restaurant all the time. They come in and they're all red-eyed or glassy-eyed, and they're just moving slow. We don't have an issue of anybody smoking on the job because that's a fireable offense. But if they come in and they're already under the influence, there's not a whole lot we can do now with all the medical marijuana cards and everything like that.
But you say that. Remove the word marijuana. Would people show up at work drunk? Is it because, and I think I know the answer to this.
There's not a medical alcohol card.
Fair enough. But is it easier to function while under marijuana than it is to function under an alcohol? Because I know people that drink at work or have drank at work or have alcohol at lunch.
It seems
marijuana is more so.
More what?
There's more of it and people are less even attempting to hide it.
And I think you're only going to see these numbers go up. Because as 16% of people in the survey have said they got high at work. This is not the restaurant call we just got on our open mic line. This wasn't they smoked before they came to work. This was they did it while at work. That number is up 60% over the last 5 years. Now, play this out over the long term, Bruce. You have so many more states that have medical marijuana nowadays.
Legalized,
in fact, going back to my dad, who, again, was the safety director for a massive, you know, commercial construction company. He and I talked about this. He's glad that he got out when he did, because he, with Pennsylvania just passing the medical marijuana, he didn't want to have to deal with
it,
that.
There's a lot of gray.
Right. So you're only going to see this number go up.
You say that, but here's one of the things in this study that I thought was bizarre, and you're going to have to help me understand.
What's that?
In states with medical or legal recreational marijuana, the number of people who say they went to work high or got high at work is lower than in the states that don't have legal
marijuana. Yeah, I don't know
marijuana.
What to make of that.
I don't know what to make of that.
I don't know what to make of that.
Because I would have thought legalized, it's on every street corner, everyone's all hopped up on the weed.
Well, what do you make of this?
Okay. I work in the healthcare industry and have to have my wits about me at all times.
Yes.
And also the rest of the staff, or else you guys, you patients, are going to be in trouble. I think that the law should come down on these people like a ton of bricks.
Hmm. Okay.
Wow.
So she's not saying she sees it in the healthcare. She's simply saying that if her coworkers were to be under the influence, we'd all lose out.
But this isn't this where we need a better way to determine whether it's. And again, I went through the whole DUI process. It took hours.
This was for the guy that was
with
high.
The guy we pulled over high while driving while I was out with Arizona's DPS. Having testing positive for marijuana in your system with blood or urine, whatever, does not mean that you're impaired. Do you see what I'm saying? Impairment is different from having in your system. So how do employers in this sense differentiate between someone who has it in their system as opposed to someone who is impaired and might be a danger at work? Like, we have to get better at that test. We have to.
Yeah, I get you. But I'm also of the mindset, if you're on a construction site,
operating a forklift or a backhoe,
and I can smell it on you, or your eyes are all red, or you are impaired. And frankly, let me tell you something. Yeah. I don't care if you're impaired with pot. I don't care if you're impaired with alcohol. I don't care if you're impaired with cough syrup.
Pills.
I don't care if you're impaired with the opioid because, you know, you hurt your leg 2 months ago. I don't care. There's a safety issue.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my perspective, construction, as well as healthcare. When your actions of being under the influence can have a direct impact on the safety and well-being of someone else, I take issue with that.
Wow. I don't know if there's a good argument for it. I think that there needs to continue to be some education. And it's one of the things I learned, and I heard Trooper H when we were with this guy who had a medical marijuana card. And Trooper H said to him, he goes, this card allows you to possess marijuana, allows you to possess paraphernalia, and allows you to use it. Doesn't allow you to do it in public. Doesn't allow you to do it in a car, doesn't allow you to operate a motor vehicle. You know what I'm saying? Like, there are still limits, but it appears that people think either medicinal or recreational marijuana means all bets are off.
Well, you say there are limits. There's also another limit that I would venture to say most medical marijuana card holders are unaware of. And that is, you heard in some of these calls here, Bruce, vaping, you know, they got the vape pen or whatever, because you can vape pot. Let me put it this way. You can do that. Is that legal in the state of Arizona? Is not clear. There's a case that has gone before the Superior Court here in Arizona that is making that determination. I'm trying to think of what they call it. It's not edibles would fall into that. Extracts, I think it's called extracts.
Okay.
That when we passed the medical marijuana law in Arizona, the way it was written kind of had it all wrapped up into like the flowers or the buds.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It didn't have the extracts. It didn't have the vaping or the edibles or things along those lines. So people have been arrested for possession of those materials.
Well, sure.
And that's why it's going through the judicial system right now. And we'll get some clarity on it.
We're not done with this conversation. We're not done with it at all. But boy, has this been a rough couple of days for Arizona sports fans, Valley sports fans. The NBA lottery, to say it didn't turn out in the favor of Suns would be an understatement. And today, Arizona Cardinals fans took a big hit when we learned what was going on, that Patrick Peterson would be suspended for 6 games. But there's more behind the scenes, and it may explain why there's been some tension between the Cardinals and Patrick Peterson. Gambo from Arizona Sports on 98.7 joins us next. He's the one reporting on this, and we'll talk to him about Patrick Peterson.
Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
Here's what we know. Arizona Cardinals cornerback Patrick Peterson, Pro Bowl cornerback Patrick Peterson, will be suspended for 6 games for violating the league's performance-enhancing drug policy. But wait, there's more to the story. And to help us understand it right now, he's co-host of the Burns and Gambo Show on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station, right next to our sister station, John Gambadoro. Gambo, what's up?
Bruce, Pamela, so good to be on with you.
Well, you say that, but man, what a tough time to be a Cards fan.
It is. This is a big blow. This is a big blow to the Cardinals. He is their best defensive player. He will be suspended for 6 games, lose around $4 million.
Oof.
Testing positive for performance-enhancing drugs, gets him a 4-game suspension, and then trying to hide it with a masking agent gets him another 2. So 6 games and about $4 million lost for Patrick Peterson. The Cardinals will be without their top cornerback and perennial Pro Bowl player for the first 6 games of the season.
All right, so Gambo, talk to me a little bit about how this is going to impact the expectations of the team this season. I mean, they got a new coach and everything.
They did. They have added some new players at that same position. They drafted a kid named Byron Murphy in the second round. They added a cornerback named Robert Alford. But anytime, Pamela, you lose your best player, your shutdown corner, I mean, obviously it's going to hurt. It's 6 games. You try to survive without them, and then you get him back for the final 10. But they will have to go the first 6 without him. It will be a new defense. They've got a new defensive coordinator in Vance Joseph. Look, this isn't good. You try to survive, but every team has to go with, you know, mm-hmm. with players that are injured, and suspensions do happen. So they're just going to have to ride this roller coaster out for the first 6 games. And hopefully, listen, the expectations aren't high anyway, Pamela. This team won 3 games last year. Not a lot of people thinking that they're going to go to the playoffs this year. So the expectations are kind of low going in.
Gambo joins us right now, co-host of the Burns and Gambo Show on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Now, there is some behind-the-scenes maneuvering, and you're one of the ones that's helping us understand and report this, that it strikes me, even just looking at the outside, there's been a little bit of tension between Patrick Peterson and the Cardinals. We saw it. There was talk of him being traded or asking for it. There's been some cryptic social media posts. Are we starting to understand a little bit more of kind of the backstory, what's been going on?
Well, 100%, Bruce. We understand 100% now. It was about 3-4 weeks ago, Patrick Peterson was upset with the organization. I reported that it had nothing to do with wanting a trade, nothing to do with wanting to rip up his contract and get a new contract or anything like that. What I was being told by former players of his, several, was that he was upset with the organization over a personal issue. He was upset with the team. And you know, he scrubbed the team from social media, and he didn't show up for the voluntary workout at all. He went golfing instead. What I'm finding out now is that he wanted the Cardinals to rework his contract. That could have saved him money on the suspension. So they were able to rework his contract. This is what he wanted. He wanted the Cardinals to rework his contract, restructure it. I don't know in what way, but he did want to restructure. So maybe instead of losing $4 million, he maybe only loses $2 million. I don't think it would have been allowed. I don't know if the NFL would have allowed it. But that is what why he was upset with the organization, is because he was looking for ways to try to save some of that money, knowing he was going to lose so much.
So he's known this for a while.
I'm going to assume that they've known about this for about a month. It's just coming out today. But I'm going to assume, based on, well, you know, the timing of when he was upset with the organization, that it's probably been close to a month now that the Cardinals and Patrick Peterson both know that this suspension was coming down. It could be the reason why the Cardinals took a cornerback in the second round, why they signed Robert Alford as a free agent to try to prepare for this.
We're talking right now to John Gambadoro. That is Gambo to most of you out there. He is the co-host of the Bruce and Gambo Show on 98.
Bruce and Gambo?
Oh, Burns. I've been doing that all morning.
I want to get rid of Bruce. Oh,
I should be so lucky to work with him.
I'll tell you. I don't know, Gambo. I don't know if you want that. Burns and Gambo Show on 98.7 FM.
My show. She just wants her show all for herself.
Hey, you know what, though? I'm wondering, What does this do to his legacy? I mean, this guy has made the Pro Bowl each of his 8 seasons. It seems as though there's going to be like a ... after his name Ooh. With this.
Well, no question, Pamela, and it's a great question. One, he is ineligible for the Pro Bowl this year, so that streak will come to an end. He is not eligible to be on the Pro Bowl with this suspension, so that streak is over. He will not be a Pro Bowl player. But it is a very good question. This hurts his legacy tremendously. Sure. He asked for a trade in the towards the end of last year, and then he got upset with the organization, and he scrubbed. The fans are upset. I mean, the fans are extremely upset with him right now, very disappointed. This is a captain. He let his teammates down. He let the organization down. He let the fan base down. He let a lot of people down. And most importantly, he let himself down by doing this. I mean, he needs to be – he's a captain, and captains are held in a little bit higher esteem. Mm-hmm. And this is a tremendous blow to him. This is a tremendous blow with the fans. Fans want to get rid of him. Fans want him gone now. Fans are done with him. They have no apathy for him.
Gamble, you have a much better relationship with players and you're around them. Is Patrick Peterson the type of person or the type of personality that will stand up, take responsibility, be humble about – is that his nature?
We're going to find out. He's got a charity event tonight.
Oh, geez. Wow.
Yeah,
okay. There you have
charity.
It.
He's got a charity. He's got a charity event tonight, so I expect he's going to show up. I don't think he would, blow it off.
Yeah.
But if I was Patrick Peterson, I'd give him any advice, man. I would just own up to it. I would apologize. I would say I made a terrible mistake. I'm going to do everything I can in my power to get back and help this team with football. I mean, that's the only play he's got is to just beg for forgiveness and take the responsibility and say, look, I made a lot of mistakes, and this was a terrible mistake. Now, but again, fans have seen him whine about a bunch of things over the last 6 months. I think fans are very upset with him, and it will be interesting to see if the fans will accept his apology.
Gambo, thank you so much for your time today. Some great reporting coming from John Gambadoro, co-host of the Burns and Gambo Show on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. As we learn, Patrick Peterson will miss the first 6 games of the season. He will not be eligible until the October 20th game.
Yeah, if you miss any of Gambo's interview there, we also talked to Kathy Hoffman, State Superintendent of Public Instruction. You can always go back, listen to the podcast, Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes Show podcast, brought to you this week by NovoCure.
We're awaiting a rollout of a new immigration proposal, one that we've seen from Jared Kushner, Trump speaking from the White House. We will carry it for you in its entirety. That's coming up next on Arizona's News Station.
KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Get some perspective. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
We are seeing images of the lawn at the White House. Pamela, I admit that I don't know if it's the north, south, east, west.
It's the Rose Garden.
Or south lawn. It's the Rose Garden. Mm-hmm. Okay. And we are awaiting Trump's arrival, which is happening kind of as we speak. We're expecting an unveiling of a new immigration plan. Do something.
Yeah, after years of setbacks and stalemates, we've got the president who is just moments away from laying out yet another immigration plan. This one, though, is going to be geared towards convincing us and lawmakers that the nation's legal immigration system should be changed and overhauled.
Which is interesting because I don't know if there's a huge disagreement on that. The legal immigration system seems to be working, right? But let's hear what he has to say. We go now live to the Rose Garden.
And it's about time. If adopted, our plan will transform America's immigration system into the pride of our nation and the envy of the modern world. Our proposal builds upon our nation's rich history of immigration while strengthening the bonds of citizenship that bind us together as a national family. Throughout our history, we have proudly welcomed newcomers to our shores. Out of many people from many places, we have forged one people and one nation under God, and we're very proud of it. We share the same home, we share the same destiny, and we pledge allegiance to the same great American flag. Our policies have turbocharged our economy. Now we must implement an immigration system that will allow our citizens to prosper for generations to come. Today, we are presenting a clear contrast. Democrats are proposing open borders, lower wages, and frankly, lawless chaos. We are proposing an immigration plan that puts the jobs, wages, and safety of American workers first. Our proposal is pro-American, pro-immigrant, and pro-worker. It's just common sense. It will help all of our people, including millions of devoted immigrants, to achieve the American dream. We are grateful to be joined this afternoon by a tremendous number of people from the House, the Senate, and my cabinet. And I love you all, but I won't introduce you all because I'll be here all day long. But you're all here. Our plan achieves two critical goals. First, it stops illegal immigration and fully secures the border. And second, it establishes a new legal immigration system that protects American wages, promotes American values, and attracts the best and brightest from all around the world. The proposal begins with the most complete and effective border security package ever assembled by our country or any other country, for that matter. So important. This plan was not developed, I'm sorry to say, by politicians. We have a lot of politicians. But you respect the people and you know the people that have developed this plan. It was designed with significant input from our great law enforcement professionals to detail what they need to make our border, which is 100% operationally secure, 100%. Everyone agrees that the physical infrastructure on the border and the ports of entry is gravely underfunded and woefully inadequate. We scan only a small fraction of the vehicles, goods, and all of the other things coming across, including people. And sadly, the drugs pour across our border. We're going to stop it. Investment in technology will ensure we scan 100% of everything coming through, curbing the flow of drugs and contraband while speeding up legal trade and commerce. It's the most heavily traded monetarily border anywhere in the world, and it's not even close. To make certain that we are constantly making the upgrades we need, our proposal creates a permanent and self-sustaining border security trust fund. This will be financed by the fees and revenues generated at the border crossings itself. Importantly, we're already building the wall, and we should have close to 400 miles built by the end of next year, and probably even more than that. It's going up very rapidly. And I want to thank the Army Corps of Engineers. They're doing a fantastic job on the wall. And that's a wall that is desperately needed. As we close the gaps in our physical framework, we must also close the gaps in our legal framework. Critical to ending the border crisis is removing all incentives for smuggling women and children. Current law, that's right. Women and children. People have no idea how bad it is unless you're there and unless you are a member of law enforcement. They see it every day and they can't believe what they see. Current law and federal court rulings encourage criminal organizations to smuggle children across the border. The tragic result is that 65% of all border crossers this year were either minors or adults traveling with minors. Our plan will change the law to stop the flood of child smuggling and to humanely reunite unaccompanied children with their families back home and rapidly, soon as possible. We must also restore the integrity of our broken asylum system. Our nation has a proud history of affording protection to those fleeing government persecutions. Unfortunately, legitimate asylum seekers are being displaced by those lodging frivolous claims. These are frivolous claims to gain admission into our country. Asylum abuse also strains our public school systems, our hospitals, and local shelters, using funds that we should and that have to go to elderly veterans, at-risk youth, Americans in poverty, and those in genuine need of protection. We're using the funds that should be going to them, and that shouldn't happen. And it's not going to happen in a very short period of time. Have to get this approved. My plan expedites relief for legitimate asylum seekers by screening out the meritless claims. If you have a proper claim, you will quickly be admitted. If you don't, you will promptly be returned home. Crucially, our plan closes loopholes in federal law to make clear that gang members and criminals are inadmissible. These are some of the worst people anywhere in the world, MS-13 and others. Inadmissible, not coming in. We're taking them out all the time by the thousands a year, but they come in. They are no longer admissible. And for criminals already here, we will ensure their swift deportation. We will keep our community safe. Americans can have complete and total confidence that under this plan, the borders will finally be fully and totally secured. And I know a number of our Republican friends and others, Lindsay, I see you sitting right there, and Steve, you're working on a plan, an immediate plan, a smaller plan, but a very immediate plan to stop it as of this afternoon. So as fast as you can get something done. This is the big, beautiful, bold plan, but we need something very quickly. And if you can get it done, that would be fantastic. Okay? Thank you. Appreciate you working on it. A topic of less discussion in national media, but of vital importance to our country, is our legal immigration system itself. Our plan includes a sweeping modernization of our dysfunctional legal immigration process. It is totally dysfunctional. The system will finally be fair, transparent, and promote equality and opportunity for all. Every year, we admit 1.1 million immigrants as permanent legal residents. These green card holders get lifetime authorization to live and work here and a five-year path to American citizenship. This is the most prized citizenship anywhere in the world by far. Currently, 66% of legal immigrants come here on the basis of random chance. They're admitted solely because they have a relative in the United States, and it doesn't really matter who that relative is. Another 21% of immigrants are issued either by random lottery or because they're fortunate enough to be selected for humanitarian relief. Random selection is contrary to American values and blocks out many qualified potential immigrants from around the world who have much to contribute. While countless, and you wouldn't believe how many countries like Canada, create a clear path for top talent. America does not. Under the senseless rules of the current system, we're not able to give preference to a doctor, a researcher, a student who graduated number one in his class from the finest colleges in the world. Anybody, we're not able to take care of it. We're not able to make those incredible breakthroughs. If somebody graduates top of their class from the best college, sorry, go back to your country. We want to keep them here. Companies are moving offices to other countries because our immigration rules prevent them from retaining highly skilled and even, if I might, totally brilliant people. We discriminate against genius. We discriminate against brilliance. We won't anymore once we get this passed, and we hope to get it passed as soon as possible. Some of the most skilled students at our world-class universities are going back home because they have no relatives to sponsor them here in the United States, and that's the only way. We want these exceptional students and workers to stay and flourish and thrive in America. Thank you. As a result of our broken rules, the annual green card flow is mostly low wage and low skilled. Newcomers compete for jobs against the most vulnerable Americans and put pressure on our social safety net and generous welfare programs. Only 12% of legal immigrants are selected based on skill or based on merit. In countries like Canada, Australia, and New Zealand, and others, that number is closer to 60 and even 70 and 75% in some cases. The biggest change we make is to increase the proportion of highly skilled immigration from 12% to 57%, and we'd like to even see if we can go higher. This will bring us in line with other countries and make us globally competitive. At the same time, we prioritize the immediate family of new Americans, spouses and children, the loved ones you choose to build a life with. We prioritize, and we have to do that. They go right to the front of the line, right to the front of the line where they should be. America's last major overhaul of our legal admissions policy was 54 years ago. Think of that. So a major update, and that's what this is, merit system and a heart system, is long overdue. The millions of legal immigrants who have come to America over the past half century are now cherished members of our national family. Going forward, it is their interest and in their interest and their children's interest to adopt a green card system that promotes a rising standard of living for all of our citizens. 3 in 4 new jobs at the end of last year went to Americans previously out of the workforce. Our economy is better probably than it ever has been in the history of our country. And because of that great economy, we're able to do things that nobody ever thought possible before. And that's what we're going to do for immigration, finally. Wages are rising, but our current immigration system works at cross purposes, placing downward pressure on wages for the working class, which is what we don't want to do. Last year, we also passed historic criminal justice reform. And we had tremendous backing, bipartisan, from Democrats, Republicans, conservatives, liberals. I guess we could also use the word progressives. A new word that's come about. Americans with criminal records are getting a second chance at life in higher numbers than ever before. Unfortunately, the current immigration rules allow foreign workers to substitute for Americans seeking entry-level jobs. So foreign workers are coming in and they're taking the jobs that would normally go to American workers. America's immigration system should bring in people who will expand opportunity for striving, low-income Americans, not to compete with those low-income Americans. Our proposal fulfills our sacred duty to those living here today while ensuring America remains a welcoming country to immigrants joining us tomorrow. And we want immigrants coming in. We cherish the open door that we want to create for our country. But a big proportion of those immigrants must come in through merit and skill. The White House plan makes no change to the number of green cards allocated each year, but instead of admitting people through random chance, we will establish simple, universal criteria for admission to the United States. No matter where in the world you're born, no matter who your relatives are, if you want to become an American citizen, it will be clear exactly what standard we ask you to achieve. It will be made crystal clear. This will increase the diversity of immigration flows into our country. We will replace the existing green card categories with a new visa, the Build America visa, which is what we all want to hear. Like Canada and so many other modern countries, we create an easy-to-navigate points-based selection system. You will get more points for being a younger worker, meaning you will contribute more to our social safety net. You will get more points for having a valuable skill, an offer of employment, an advanced education, or a plan to create jobs. We lose people that want to start companies, and in many cases, they're forced to leave our country, go back usually to the country where they came from, and they'll start up companies, and some of those companies are among the biggest and most successful companies today in the world. They could have started them right here in the United States, where they wanted to do it in the first place. Now they'll have a chance. Priority will also be given to higher wage workers, ensuring we never undercut American labor. To protect benefits for American citizens, immigrants must be financially self-sufficient. Finally, to promote integration, assimilation, and national unity, future immigrants will be required to learn English and to pass a civics exam prior to admission. Through these steps, we will deliver an immigration system that respects and even strengthens our culture, our traditions, and our values. 4 months ago, I had the honor of participating in a swearing-in ceremony for new Americans right here in the Oval Office. It was a beautiful reminder that American citizenship is the most precious gift our nation has to offer. When we swear in new citizens, we do more than give them a permit. We give them a history, a heritage, a home, and a future of limitless possibilities and potential. Our nation used to pride ourselves on this capacity, our unique ability to instill the spirit of America into any human heart, into any human being. Many of the Democrats have claimed to be for these concepts at different times in their careers, and in many cases, in very recent history. And I hope that they will end up joining me and all of the people gathered together today in putting politics aside, putting security and wages first, and pursuing these historic reforms. It's time. And if for some reason, possibly political, we can't get the Democrats to approve this merit-based high-security plan, then we will get it approved immediately after the election when we take back the House, keep the Senate, and, of course, hold the presidency. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. But wouldn't it be nice to do it sooner than that? But it's not a very long time, is it? 16 months. One of the reasons we will win is because of our strong, fair, and pro-America immigration policy. It's time to restore our national unity and reaffirm our national purpose. It is time to rebuild our country for all Americans. Together, we will create an immigration system to make America safer and stronger and greater than ever before. Thank you. God bless you all. Thank you very much. Thank you.
So that is the immigration plan laid out, very similar to at least the talking points that we got from a White House advisor, Jared Kushner, earlier in the week.
There was a little bit more to it than just what Jared Kushner released, because it seemed at first we were talking so much about legal immigration, you know, changing the green card. Same amount of people are going to be able to come in, but the type of people are going to change. The president called it the Build America visa, and it would be based on points, and you would get points if you're younger, if you have an advanced degree, if you have a job
offer, lined up.
Yeah, or if you're going to create jobs here in the United States. And I thought that it was weird that he was focusing more on legal immigration, but there was a substantial portion of this speech today where he did talk about border security. In fact, he said that this is the border security package that is the most comprehensive and complete we've ever seen.
I think there's parts in this that you could get a lot of people to agree on, like the points-based legal immigration system similar to Canada or Australia. You and I have talked about this, you know, that is, there's nothing fundamentally bizarre about that. It does, where they're going to lose people on this is, again, no mention of DACA, which at least the D's say, we're not negotiating on anything if you don't give us that. I don't know how much of a non-starter that is. And the realization that the people coming to our southern border right now are legally applying for asylum, changing of asylum laws doesn't appear to be a large appetite for that right now.
But it's not as though he isn't going to try, because in this, he talked about expediting legitimate asylum seekers that have a proper claim. And if not, he says, you will promptly be returned home. And the plan closes the loopholes, he says, in some of these federal laws. Now, what exactly that means, how do you make that happen? The devil seems to be in the details.
Sure.
I would love for it to expedite what do they call it? Proper claims, legitimate asylum seekers.
Sure.
I think that's great.
Agreed.
And then, you know what? Quickly, promptly, send the rest home.
Okay.
I, I love that.
No argument.
I just want to see how are you going to do it.
Concertina wire and the troops on the border won't do that. Do you see what I'm saying? So, all of the wall won't do that. All the proposals don't address the problem.
Right. So I think, again, it gets back to devil in the details, because that aspect about this plan, I like. There was something else about it I liked.
What's that?
He talked about investing in technology down along the ports of entry so that we can scan everything at the border.
Yeah. We've heard Border Patrol say they need more of that.
Great.
Yeah.
So there were some aspects of his speech, which he seemed a little tired in.
Low energy.
I digress.
Low energy.
But there were some aspects about it that I genuinely liked.
What did you think about the point, because it kind of stuck out to me, requiring everyone immigrating into this country to learn English?
You know what? On the surface, I get why he would say that. I just think it's common sense that you're like, yeah, if you're going to be in America, you're going to know English. Though I back up from that. I mean, his wife was an immigrant. I wonder if she knew English when she came here.
We don't require Americans.
So again,
to learn, speak English. How can you require everyone else?
So there are certain things that you're like, yeah, that kind of makes sense. But then when you drill down on it with certain points, it gets a little bit murkier.
Yeah, we don't have like English only things. We've had those discussions before about whether you would do English like that. Yeah, I mean, again, I guess you could say,
what did you like in this? Was there anything in here that you didn't like that jumped out to you?
Well, I just thought that he talked about a bunch of things that, like you just pointed out, rational, reasonable people can agree on. But they agreed on them before. It's the parts that people don't agree, you know, that where is the leadership on that? Where is the proposal on that? Where is the compromise on that? On the things people don't agree, as opposed to let's make America great. Okay. Yeah. With all the applause lines, I'm like, okay, everybody agrees on that.
Well, he called it a big, beautiful, bold plan. Uh-huh. And I also thought it was interesting that he acknowledged Lindsey Graham, Senator Lindsey Graham,
yeah,
who was also sitting in the Rose Garden audience there, and acknowledged Graham's plan and applauded him for trying to get something done quickly. So I don't know what else is going on there. I don't know. That just seemed odd to me. It seemed like a very weird placed acknowledgement.
They just noticed
but
them.
I think that there were some good things that were in this plan. Again, I got to learn a little bit more about it on the surface. I like it. Drill down on it a little bit more, and we'll see where it goes.
And again, it's kind of it is not accurate to say that our immigration policy now is not merit-based in some way, shape, or form. It's just different ways to measure merit.
Yeah, what do you want to prioritize?
Right. Hey, thanks for spending time with us today. Pamela and I appreciate it. We looked through the double-pane bulletproof glass. We've got DJ Tommy Two-Tone, super producer Stevie Z.